Good morning, counsel.
Good morning, Your Honors. Timothy Scott, may it please the court, on behalf of the appellant Mark Gelizella. Mr. Gelizella was granted a bond pending appeal, and he's joining us in the courtroom here today. Your Honors, we're asking that this trial conviction be reversed, because even if we accept the government's evidence at face value, the offense that they alleged was completed as a matter of law outside of the five-year statute of limitations in this case. And as such, it should have been time-barred. That error manifested itself and actually compounded upon itself in three different ways based on the district court's ruling.
Let me just ask you about that assertion, because our case law says that if the scheme as divide includes lulling, then that lulling is part of the scheme. It's not completed until the lulling is over. And the lulling emails were the wire fraud in this case, were the charged wires, correct?
Well, I think there's two answers to that. The first is that to say that the emails were the offense, I think...
The emails weren't the offense, but the offense requires the use of the wires for some essential element. And the wires at issue in this case were the August 2010 emails, correct?
That's true, Your Honor. Yeah, the August emails were the ones that were alleged as the wires. I think factually it's important that those were not the first instances of wires that were sent. Certainly wires went back and forth by email on countless occasions before that. The reason
that matter?
It does, because if we're talking about meeting the elements of the offense, then that element of the offense was met far, far earlier.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
But the fact that the elements of the offense may have been met earlier doesn't mean that the government has to stop charging when an offense has been committed. If, as Judge Ikuda says, the government alleges and the jury is instructed that the lulling emails are part of the scheme as originally devised, doesn't our case law make that very clear, that lulling emails can be charged as part of a mail or wire fraud scheme?
The answer to the second question is yes. Lulling emails can certainly be charged. The answer to the first question, though, or the first assertion, that just because the elements are met, does that matter? And I hope I'm not misstating what the court said, but to paraphrase, it does matter very much if the elements are met. And the reason for that is that in a statute of limitations context, once all of the elements of the offense are met, that's when the clock starts. Now, I don't quarrel with the notion that the government can continue to charge whichever wires they see fit as the offense, but the limitation on that is that that has to be within the statute of limitations.
So you can't have a scheme that continues, say, for 6 or 7 years?
Well, I hypothetically you could, but the Ninth Circuit has held squarely that wire fraud is not a continuing offense.
Right. That's not a continuing offense. That's a single scheme, which is what the statute identifies as being the offense. And if the scheme can include lulling emails, then I don't think it matters at what point the lulling emails stopped. That it's after the last lulling email that the scheme is completed. So that was the government's theory, and I don't see why that's wrong. If you can help explain.
Sure. So let me try to address the lulling aspect of it. The main case, as I understand it, that the government in the district court relied upon is the Tonkey case. I think I'm saying that right. T-A-N-K-E. Importantly, I think Tonkey was not a statute of limitations case. Tonkey was a sufficiency of the evidence case, and it addressed whether the element of wire fraud or the wiring component of it can be met by some allegedly lulling email after the fact. And the answer was sometimes, essentially.
And in Lane, we also said that had lulling emails, as long as they were part of the scheme as originally devised, is part of the offense.
Well, and so that's a key modifier. The scheme is originally devised.
Well, that's what they alleged. That's what the government alleged in the indictment.
What?
And what the jury had to find, I assume.
Well, I don't think either. Certainly the jury wasn't instructed the scheme as originally devised. And I think what compounded that in terms of jury instructions is that the jury was also at liberty to convict not simply or merely on lulling, but also if it was to facilitate the concealment of the scheme.
But the jury was specifically instructed, wasn't this instruction number 6, that the wire communication must have been sent prior to the scheme's completion, and in deciding whether the scheme was completed, you're to consider the scope of the scheme as it was originally devised by the participants. So doesn't that, the fact that the jury found that beyond a reasonable doubt, doesn't that answer your objections?
No, for two reasons. And the first is that it doesn't say originally devised.
It doesn't have to be originally, right? So we've said the scheme can change over time. That's not a problem. The only thing that we've ruled out is 3 years later, and I think it was Lazarenko case, 3 years later there's efforts to conceal it. So it doesn't have to be originally devised.
It can evolve as it's ongoing, but it can't be simply to conceal the offense. And I think that the nature of lulling, or what this court has recognized as lulling, is important. It's not the Saunders case, but the case that that Tonkey relied upon, where there was the exchange of property and then a letter was sent out to say you've now acquired this property and you know, here's the deed or words to that effect. That was devised as part of the scheme specifically to provide evidence and assurance in the course of the scheme as it was conceived of by the defendants.
But counsel, here the charged allegedly lulling emails were, the money's coming. You're getting your money back. Isn't that like an archetypal or archetypical lulling communication? Just keep waiting. Just do a couple of things, and the money is coming.
No, not on the facts of this case. The timeline of this case was that all of the money that was acquired was in about a 3-month period between November of 2009 and March of 2010. Importantly, and I think a key distinguishing fact from any of the lulling cases that we're familiar with, is that the SEC was investigating deposed the defendant, who within a week of being deposed by the SEC sent an email to all investors saying to them explicitly, the SEC is investigating this matter. And to be fair, they didn't say, you know, they caught us, we're guilty or anything like that. But they said, look, there appears to be, you know, some sort of a witch hunt, I think is the words that were described. So we're shutting the program down. Now, I think that that's a key distinguishing fact, because that is a lot different than saying, you know, the money's coming, this is all part of the scheme. I don't think by any reasonable measure, reasonable jury could have found that the scheme, either as devised or as it evolved, included, let's have the SEC investigate, shut down the program entirely, and then 3 months later, and I think importantly, in response to an email from investors to say, look, we are trying to get the money back, it's going to come back tomorrow. Because
but it's like, just sign this thing saying we didn't do anything wrong, we're not criminals, and you'll get your money back. That's what the wires essentially said, right?
Right. And money back was never the scheme, even if you take the government's evidence at face value. The scheme was, you know, to return untold returns on investment. As an evidentiary matter, as a factual matter, there is no evidence that this was, in fact, either designed to be lulling or part of a scheme, either as it originated or as it evolved at some point. Mr. Galazella, of course, testified to the contrary. That's the defendant's evidence. But even the government's evidence, the one witness who was on the inside that they called was a Mr. Haglund, was a alleged co-conspirator, and he explicitly testified on cross-examination that that the emails that were sent were in direct response to this other co-conspirator's assurance that the money was in fact coming. So just as a factual matter, there is no support for the government to assert that this was in fact a lulling email. I see that I've got about 30 seconds left. What I would finish with is this. if this is at all a close case, and we would argue that we're on the other side of it being a close case, but if this is an equipoise, if it's anywhere close to equipoise, the Supreme Court has taught us in the 2C case and its progeny that statutes of repose need to be liberally interpreted in favor of the defendant. And so in this case, and I wish I would have had the opportunity to address the response to the note, but that didn't occur here. And so with that, I see my time has expired. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court, Daniel Ahn for the United States. I'd just like to make one point, which is the defendant doesn't contest the sufficiency of the evidence. And I think that's a tacit concession that the evidence before the jury was more than sufficient to return a verdict of guilty on the lulling counts. This court, I think, has seized on the fundamental defects with the appeal that my friend has raised. And without belaboring the point, I think I would just submit on the papers unless the court has any questions and urge affirmance.
Here's not. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you to both counsel. The case just argued is submitted for decision by the court.